episode 240 of the Anarchist News Podcast, a digest and/or conversations on anarchist activity, ideas, and comments from the previous week on anarchistnews.org. What's new this week? The Futility of Struggle, from rattle.me by Zeke. A heartfelt rant fleshing out one take on the criticism inherent in the word strugglismo. This text challenges the idea, endemic to many, many radicals, that acting for some grand plan is required for, or the best way to be, an anarchist. Quote, "I destroy that which crushes me because I don't find being crushed to be very pleasant. I don't destroy authority because I'm under the impression I'm saving the world by crushing it. I have no delusions of grandeur. I can't save civilization or build a better civilization. I'm not a vessel for change. I'm not the trigger for a new world order. I'm not the purveyor of universal justice. All I am is a walking, talking brick, and what I can do is break the object I aim myself at. Whatever rifts may or may not form from that action are beyond my control, and I'll be too busy aiming myself at the next grotesque object of authority to notice anyway." Unquote. Some might say that this is a nihilist anarchism. Some might say this is just anarchism taken seriously. The comments for this thread were shit, which is disappointing. That was The Futility of Struggle by Zeke.
Organize, magazine, issue 95. From the Anarchist Federation UK, the winter 2021 issue is out. I'm not trying to say this publication is dated, but they're republishing anarcho-happy fun pages. And those comics are some of the best content here. There's some appealing to the youth, TM, kinda, in the form of two pieces reviewing games. One, a recent mod for Doom 2 that's about Thatcher, and another on a recently updated tabletop game from about 100 years ago that's about suffragettes. Anomalously, for the politics of this magazine, there's an excerpt from the autobiography of Vasilis Paliakostas, aka the Greek Robin Hood, and the book was published by Freedom Press, which has us feeling all topsy-turvy, in mostly a good way. Aside from those standout breaks from tradition, this issue is full of predictable historical figures and ideas. That was Organize, magazine, issue 95.
Guerrilla Bay Area on the Endless Crime Wave, from the Transmetropolitan Review. A text that is shorter than usual for the TMR, this one is a pro-looting, self-referential piece about the unmanaged reappropriation efforts that have been happening, especially in the Bay Area, and the predictable but fucked-up cop shootings in response. Quote, "Meanwhile, years of being run over and shot at by fascists had taken its toll on U.S. protest culture, and 2021 saw very few marches on the Bay Area streets, none of them as militant as last summer's. Instead, the power of the diffuse guerrilla army, the Great Sideshow Army, has grown exponentially as traditional protest culture retreats behind street barricades and armed self-defense, the only options when faced with lethal violence. From afar, it would appear that the long-feared civil conflict is already well underway, and it recently escalated after the verdict on Kyle Rittenhouse was televised across the U.S. Unquote.
Anarchy, Crime, and Prisons, from Anarchismo by Wayne Price. Price's thoughts on two books about prisons and crime, one by Lesage de la Haye, called The Abolition of Prison, the other, a collection edited by Nocella, Seis, and Chance, called Classics Writings in Anarchist Criminology. There is nothing earth-shaking here, but perhaps a useful primer on anarchist thoughts on prisons and thumbnails on what is in each of these books. Quote, "Many people think that anarchists and other prison abolitionists simply want society more or less as it is, but with no police, no courts, no laws, and no prisons. Common sense tells them that such a society, if it could miraculously come into existence, would quickly devolve into chaos, quote-unquote, anarchy. Criminals would have a field day, except in the neighborhoods of the very rich, who would hire private security guards. Eventually, a new repressive state would be formed by either organized crime or the professional rent-a-cops, or both together." Unquote. That was Anarchy, Crime, and Prisons.
Responsibility claim for attack on bank, from Athens Indie Media, a communique about an action in remembrance of the uprisings of 2008, the life of Alexis Grigoropoulos, prisoner Polycarpos Georgiadis, and two unnamed comrades. Quote, "December 2008 became the vehicle of an uprising that gave hope to those oppressed and excluded by the state and capital. Overnight, after years of social stability, the proletarian riots of December reopened the stakes of social resistance and revolution in post-communist Greece. the 2008 uprising, the occupations, the clashes, but above all, the realization that we have nothing to lose and the perception that the enemy is not invulnerable left an important legacy for the resistances in the decade of repression, poverty, and exploitation that followed. Unquote.
Violence in the hands of the violated is self-defense. From It's Going Down, no comment about translation. This statement is by Mexican women declaring themselves uncontrollable. Fuck yeah. Quote, marking, condemning, and criminalizing puts you on the side of the state and replicates its forms. Those same forms were created to keep us quiet and are presented in diverse expressions of social acceptance, such as good citizens, adequate and inclusive forms of protest, and many more. It is not by marking the other that one can contribute to the struggle. It is more like becoming a policeman and guardian of state interests. You are the informant against the ones whose rage leaves its mark in the spaces where power is concentrated. Unquote. That was Violence in the Hands of the Violated is Self-Defense.
Anarchist zines and pamphlets published in November from Sprout Distro, which is back to announcing their monthly publication list, includes an anarchist-free herbal on herbs and herbalism's relationship to anarchism, go kits for anti-fascist actions, multiple issues of Storm Warnings, which is a, quote, anarchist bulletin for the social war, a translation of a French periodical, fat mutual aid and pod mapping on how fat people can and should be included in mutual aid projects, which is a title we are particularly glad to see, as there is not enough knowledge about fat oppression in general. Finally, rumor number 5.
Polity Form, External Constitution, from Libertarian Labyrinth by Sean Wilbur. Here, Sean returns to his homie Proudhon in a conversation about Proudhon's development of definitions of government, disagreements with some of his non-anarchist contemporaries, and this text explains polity form as a, quote, descriptor for more or less fixed, static associations or organizations, including the governmental state, the capitalist firm, the patriarchal family, quote-unquote, the people, within a democracy, the commune in some descriptions of communism, the individual in the context of some forms of individualism, etc. All of these are in some sense both hierarchical, authoritarian, to some extent, representative structures, even when, in a democracy or some forms of communism, the people at the top of the hierarchy is presumed to be the sum of the persons at the bottom. The doubling is almost always explicitly for the purposes of imposing the will of the whole on more recalcitrant parts. Unquote. Yes, indeed. Sean's always worth reading. That was Polity Form.
News from Belarusian prisons, November 2021, from Anarchist Black Cross Belarus. Brief updates on multiple inmates, and of course the news is mostly not good. Parcels have been denied, sick people have been harassed and endangered, people on trial have been denied public support, one inmate is on hunger strike. There is information on how to donate to ABC Belarus.
Operation Sibylla, Solidarity Communique from Buda. From Anarchist Buda Cross, translated by Act for Freedom Now. This message reiterates the information on Operation Sibylla that has been posted to ANews before. The number of cities in which houses were raided, the targeting of Alfredo Cospito and other defendants, as well as the websites Round Robin and Malacoda, and the newspaper Petrilio. Quote, solidarity with the defendants of the Sibylla operation and with those of the Renata, Prometeo, Scintilla, Lince, and Scripta Manet operations, and with their support networks. For an international solidarity that thwarts repression and strengthens our means of struggle. Unquote. That was Operation Sibylla, communique from Bure.
Why anarchists can't be absent from the new wave of labor militancy from It's Going Down. The relationship of anarchists to popular movements, as we have noted before, is wrought. Do we join in opportunistically and try to aim rebellions in directions we like? Do we join in as individual actors and do what seems right in the moment? Do we do things we do anyway, but use the distraction by state forces to our benefit? Or do we sit and watch and see what happens? This piece doesn't, however, ask any of those questions, but merely actively activates fellow activists to become more activated in workplaces. It says things like, quote, nothing scares the shit out of bosses more than a union drive, unquote. And, quote, I am not demanding that everyone join a union. More so, I am asking fellow anarchists and abolitionists to start organizing the one place we've largely been absent from, the workplace, unquote. classic that anarcho-syndicalist writer sees a groundswell of anger and frustration from workers and attempts to channel that into workplace solidarity groups. Oh, IGD, you do you. Anyway, the comments for this are decent. Yay! Also, yeah, read Kamat and Muniz. Final note, it's funny to me when Anons talk to themselves about interesting philosophical questions like, what is work? But only enough to call themselves names. Oh, Anon, you do you.
Banner drop in memory of Alexis Grigoropoulos from Athens Indie Media. Quote, as of today, 6/12/2021, it has been 13 years since the Greek state murdered the anarchist Alexis Grigoropoulos. Alexis was shot by two cops, E. Korkoneas and V. Sarliotis, in the neighborhood of Exarchia, following minor clashes with the police. As soon as the news of Alexis's murder broke, a spontaneous insurrection began. Protests, riots, expropriations, and occupations of public buildings were but some of the collective expressions of rage. Despite the attempts of state and capital to depoliticize the murder, we must not forget that Alexis was killed because of his political beliefs. He challenged, in practice, the authority of the police, and by extension, that of the state. This is the violence faced every day by those whose existence the state deems undesirable, those who are a threat to their social order. 13 years later, the spirit of the December revolt is alive in the resistance of the anarchist/anti-authoritarian movement. As anarchists, we stand in solidarity with all insurrections against the state apparatus worldwide, present and future. Our struggles take place in our streets and neighborhoods, in our workplaces, schools, and universities. We will reclaim our space and our lives. Unquote.
Response from Heraclean Crete from enoughisenough14.org. A report on a protest, presumably also for the anniversary of the murder of Alexis, in which multiple anarchists were arrested for no reason. Quote, the block stood decently, repelling the attack where flashbangs and tear gas were thrown between the tables and the pedestrians in the center of Heraclean. The reversal of reality by local tabloids that demonstrators were allegedly outraged from bystanders and that the police intervened is just an alibi for the brutality of the attackers and the arrests made by the police. The result of this attack was 8 arrests of whoever they could find in front of them at that moment. Unquote.
What is the state? From the agency and 8K Press. This is an announcement of an advertisement video for an 8K book called The Operating System. Some of the drawings are decent, of course, as they are by Seth Bachman. The video is linked, and it's less than 4 minutes long. I didn't get through the whole thing.
ABC Belarus statement on Dmitry Z. from Anarchist Black Cross Belarus. An ex-prisoner is a bad housemate, is forcibly removed from a squat. The group that supports prisoners reminds people that someone being a prisoner doesn't mean that they will be a good housemate, and don't lionize prisoners. Always a good thing to remember. Also, we don't want to be lionizing anyone, right? People are people. Also, write an anarchist prisoner today.
New call for direct action against Catalunya. Received via email in Spanish. English translation by Anarchist News. This is a bit brutal to follow as it refers to events and groups that some of us has never heard of, and involves internecine struggles that are hard to track. It definitely sounds like we're on the side of the letter writers, but of course, what the fuck does that mean? Quote, the anti-anarchist Girona is a classic bastion in the so-called Deep Catalunya, and it's not mere coincidence that there was perpetrated a sociological pilot experiment aimed at neutralizing the subversive potential of certain spaces that, fianosas, were obstacles, or put simply, were a pain in the ass for the CU police and their plans to have the monopoly of social struggles in the continuous territories of their zone of political influence. Anarchist squats, such as San Rusk and San Como, were seen as competition by the authoritarian communist separatists of the region. It was necessary to tame them to stop the contagious virus of anarchy. We're going to repeat it 1,001 times if it's necessary, infiltrate and divide, or boycott and destroy, unquote. Sounds right.
June 30th, 1876, Peter Kropotkin escapes from prison. From Crime Think, this is an advertisement for an upcoming detritus book on this chapter from Kropotkin's life. Cool.
War isn't funny. From the Transmetropolitan Review, Potato writer gives U.S. readers, or readers of English, some geography and history lessons, and explains a bit about his life and why he's scared that war would not only start in the Ukraine, but be on his doorstep. Always an entertaining read, this potato, and we definitely all have reasons to be freaked out about the future, no doubt. That's War Isn't Funny.
A Convicted Anarchist Speaks Truth to Injustice from Mongoose Distro by Dan Baker. Some Personal History and Musings by recent inmate and dishonorably discharged veteran Dan Baker. Seems like he'd be a fun person to correspond with. Quote, you must define yourself by reading, discussing, and acting on the conclusions your community agrees on. I recommend making soap and community gardens. Unquote. Write an anarchist prisoner today. His address is posted in the story. That's Convicted Anarchist Speaks Truth to Injustice.
A Farewell to the Worker Solidarity Movement. From Freedom News, UK, Ireland. After 57 years, this platformist organization is ending. The only hint as to why is here. Quote, each of us expects to remain active in anarchist politics and indeed to often find ourselves working together, including, potentially, as members of future organizations. We recognize that old habits are hard to overcome and that younger generations of anarchists are better placed to come up with the structures and organizing practices most suited to the current moment. Unquote. Cool.
Carla, I mean, cool was supposed to sound more sarcastic than that. Anyway.
Okay. Cool, I guess. Okay.
Totally, how could you possibly tell? Call out for submissions for issue 4. From nomore.city, requests for writings local to Vancouver to be submitted by February 15th. Quote, we are also seeking to balance the focus on direct action and sabotage with other forms of struggle and building the world we seek to thrive in, such as disability justice, indigenous sovereignty, queer and trans liberation, networks of care, pleasure activism, mutual aid, race and anarchist communities, relations to nature, and more. Unquote.
The Reaction in Italy, from Fuori dalla Riserva, translated by Act for Freedom Now, by Michele Fabiani. A very interesting analysis of Operation Sibylla and how it fits into a pattern of authoritarian action. Fabiani names three lessons to look at what is happening. Desolidarization, a new form of authoritarianism, and a, quote, nihilist phase, unquote. Quote, the last aspect that Operation Sibylla tells us about is inherent in what has been called the nihilist phase, in Vetriolo. The nihilist phase, in my opinion, calls into question two kinds of problem. The first is inherent in the increasingly conflictual relationship with which science is now perceived at mass level. Bakunin prophesied this generation already 150 years ago, linking the idea of the state to the idea of God, and observing that every state power needs an ideological religious apparatus. Bakunin predicted that in the full development of the bourgeois state, scientists would become the new priests. Bakunin, it should be remembered, does not argue against science as if it had its own subjective vitality, but with a constitution of scientists as clergy. In other words, Bakunin's problem is not anti-science, it is always a social problem of the stratification of social classes in an ideological and not just a mechanistic key. Today, Bakunin's prophecy has become reality. Millions of proletarians in the world are taking to the streets against the new scribes. If even the very civilized Netherlands sees the police shooting at protesters, it means something very powerful is going on. Unquote. This is worth reading for yourself. It's called The Reaction in Italy.
To those who have a bomb in their heart, from infernourbano.noblogs.org, quote, in August 2018, two explosive devices, one of which didn't work, are placed near the local of the Lega in Viorba, in the suburbs of Treviso. An action, quote, against politicians, cops, and their minions, unquote. Juan, our friend and companion, is accused of this attack, and the court of Treviso is trying him for indiscriminate massacre, unquote. The rest of the text is mostly reminding us how ridiculous it is that an anarchist, any anarchist, should be accused of indiscriminate massacre by the state, any state, indeed.
Yeah. Audio and video. The Case of Daniel Baker, from The Final Straw Radio. An hour and 4 minutes. This is a conversation with two people in Baker's support crew, one of whom is his roommate and was there when the FBI busted down their door. This post includes the full transcript. This post includes the full transcript of the conversation and the address to write to Dan. Say it with me now.
Write an anarchist prisoner today.
In this episode of The Anarchist Library, I will be reading On the Gendered Impact of the COVID-19 Lockdown by Holly Molly. In the early weeks of this pandemic, I remember scrolling through my newsfeed to a picture of some graffiti on a wall in Hong Kong. It read, "We can't go back to normal because the normal we had was precisely the problem." It is a message that had stuck with me as this emergency has unfolded. It is this normal that we had, a normal that governments insist we should snap back to, that is shaping who will feel the effects of the pandemic the most. Because while the virus infects indiscriminately, state responses and economic, social, and health outcomes do discriminate. The extent to which the cost of coronavirus, in both economic and health terms, will be borne by the oppressed people of the world is not so much caused by the virus itself, but rather by the violent and illogical system in which we live, a system incapable of meeting human need, a system that exacerbates the division between us, no matter how many times our leaders insist that we are all in this together. Today I'm going to speak to the effect of coronavirus on women. One of the clearest examples of how the pandemic is exacerbating existing inequalities is in the economic fallout of this crisis and its effect on working-class women. Employment insecurity disproportionately affects women. In Australia, women are 50% of all employees, but they are 57% of employees without leave entitlements and 61% of award-reliant employees. Female-dominated and massively casualized industries, such as retail and hospitality, have been hit hard by the crisis. Casuals without paid leave entitlement make up two-thirds of food service workers in Australia, and the majority of those are women. "I'm one of them," it says. Through my activism in my union, I've encountered countless stories of women who are suffering as a result of this insecurity. Women made financially dependent on their partners, mothers skipping meals to feed their kids. This insecurity means that women will also disproportionately miss out on the JobKeeper scheme, which makes no provisions for casual workers without long-term employment. Many women have been forced to access their super early for immediate economic relief, despite the ongoing insecurity that this will mean for women in their retirement. Where Australian women already retire with an average of 40% less superannuation than men. Women are losing their jobs at higher rates than men, and they were making less money to begin with. We also know that the employment insecurity women face has an adverse impact on public health. A 2019 study found that temporary workers are more likely to turn up ill to work due to financial pressures. Having worked more than 8 years in hospitality, I can confirm this phenomenon firsthand. In the context of a public health emergency, it should be abundantly clear to us all what insecure workers have known all along. No worker should be made to choose between paying rent and risking the health of their colleagues and the broader community. Women's labor is also significant in that women take on the bulk of unpaid family care at home, a burden that has become even more significant amid social distancing and self-isolation. Capitalism's reliance on the invisible and unpaid labor of women has been made starkly visible in the crisis. Children out of school, the intensified care needs of older people and ill family members, and the overwhelmed health services in many countries will adversely affect the women who already do 3 times as much unpaid care and domestic work as men. One of the most obviously violent impacts of this crisis on women is the spike in domestic violence worldwide. Before the pandemic, it was estimated that 1 in 3 women will experience violence during their lifetimes. Many of these women are now trapped in homes with their abusers. Alongside the increase in incidences of violence, violence against women is also taking on a new complexity as abusers threaten victims with exposure to COVID-19 and exploit the inability of women to call for help or escape. Women that do reach out to overstretched support services risk being thrown out onto the street with nowhere to go, as the already inadequate domestic violence services struggle to cope with this increased demand, as the justice system struggles with a spike in urgent family court cases, and as domestic violence perpetrators are released into the community without any consultation with victims or their support services. It is obvious that this society, as it is organized now, cannot address the symptoms of the violence experienced by women in their daily lives, let alone its causes. It is not only domestic violence that will adversely affect women's health. Access to critical services for women, such as reproductive health services and maternal care, may become dangerously limited as health systems are overwhelmed, as was the case for many women during the Ebola outbreak. In the U.S., some states have moved further to restrict abortion access in the pandemic. And here we should also note that even where legal impediments to abortion do not exist, women's right to abortion is only realized when this service is free and easily accessible. That women's health is not sufficiently prioritized, despite women making up 70% of the health and social care workforce globally, points to a health system in which women are systematically excluded from making decisions around what this care should look like. Women workers are on the front line of this health emergency, and in a society organized around human need, they would be the workers leading our health response. It is obvious that the way our society is organized today cannot provide an adequate solution to the problems that women are facing, before, during, or after the crisis. But how can we build towards the new normal that we so urgently need? Liberal feminist voices are calling for more women in leadership positions, as if more female world leaders would somehow address these problems. And I'm certainly looking forward to seeing how a female dictator in North Korea is going to advance women's interests. Yet, if we must grant the liberals some small credit, these voices do identify that women must play a role in organizing society in their interest. We must, however, go further and demand that the fight against women's oppression is not merely a fight for equality with men within a broken system. We must recognize the need to overcome this oppressive capitalist system, a system that prioritizes the interests of the few over the interests of the many, that divides us, exploits us, and kills us in those interests. Capitalism was built on the exploitation of workers, and it thrives on the oppression of marginalized people. Another world is only possible when working class people organize society in their interests. We do not demand equality for women. We demand liberation. In the face of so much violence against women, law and order feminism would have us believe that we must turn to the state to protect us. But legislation and policing do not prevent this violence from occurring. And I'm sure it's not news to anyone reading this that police perpetrate acts of domestic violence at a higher rate than the general population, that police misidentify and endanger domestic violence victims, and that victims of sexual assault are routinely dismissed by police. In her Overland Journal article on policing during coronavirus, Lizzie O'Shea remarks that it's not the all-powerful state that is saving people's lives from this horrible virus. It's the everyday people showing up to work in hospitals and supermarkets and doing shifts delivering food. It's the millions of people who are doing their best to keep their distance, washing their hands, and trying to avoid transmission while caring and educating others. What will get us through this virus is not coercion and fear, but advocating for and carrying out the politics of care and solidarity. It is this practice of the politics of care and solidarity that will best protect women during the crisis and moving forward. I look around me, and in the face of so much horror, I've seen ordinary people come together to practice this politics. Activist networks around the world, grown over months of organizing recent struggles, are now being used to distribute medical supplies and share information on how to prevent the spread of COVID-19. In Hong Kong, activists have used their networks to share tips and reminders on avoiding coronavirus and to import and distribute more than 100,000 medical masks. I don't have the scope here to discuss the union movement in the crisis and the betrayal of the rank and file by the bureaucracy. But it is important to note that despite the many challenges facing unionists, wildcat strikes and rank-and-file organization have proven themselves to be a way for working people to assert their power, defending their lives and livelihoods from the virus and their bosses. We can also take inspiration from the mutual aid networks that have sprung up in response to the virus and the inadequacy of state responses. In a moment of need, of anxiety and social isolation, people around the world have come together to look out for their communities, just as Kropotkin used the term mutual aid to point to the inherent flaws in the social Darwinist view of nature as a competitive fight between self-interested individuals. And the appearance of mutual aid networks to address the challenges of COVID-19 can be used to point to the flaws in our state responses, to people's cooperative and social nature, and to the impressive capacity of ordinary people to organize around and meet human need. In Chile, Coordinadora Feminista 8M, a feminist collective central to the large-scale feminist mobilizations over the last 5 months, has incorporated all of these strategies into its coronavirus response, articulated in its feminist emergency plan. They articulate a plan for addressing the risk of domestic violence to women and children in quarantine, including concrete community protocols in the event of an emergency, as well as funding and refuge to be made available to those fleeing violence. They make demands for budget allocations that will facilitate community organizations in their work. They call for a strike for life, emphasizing the need for non-essential workers to stay home, and a general production strike as a mechanism to win these demands. The Coordinadora's plan is centered around an insistence that our lives are worth more than their profits, and an understanding that we must fight for the right to live in a society that reflects that. What is clear is that implementing these demands requires organization and it requires struggle. On International Working Women's Day this year, millions of women around the world took to the streets to protest against inequality and the oppression of women. In Mexico, tens of thousands of women joined the demonstrations against femicide and the government's complicity in the epidemic. In Turkey, riot police fired tear gas at the demonstrators. In Kyrgyzstan, security forces arrested about 60 people. Women rallied in cities across Pakistan, despite the court-filed petitions seeking to stop them. In Chile, a feminist general strike brought millions into the streets in what was to be a historic day as women raised their voices against the violence they experience on a daily basis, a protest that was also fundamental in maintaining the momentum of the October revolts, rejecting the legitimacy of the government and defending the right of the Chilean people to protest. The capacity for such protests has diminished in recent weeks, and the need for a resistance has only grown larger. But working-class people are more creative and more innovative than capitalism can ever be, and we have everything to gain. I've mentioned the protest that marked the International Women's Working Day, and as I was reading up for this article, it made me reflect on my own experience at the protest here in Melbourne. A Latina feminist collective performed Un Violador en Tu Camino, the feminist anthem of the Chilean movement, in a powerful expression of international solidarity between women around the world. My own contribution was much more modest, but I am proud to share the illustration I made for the protest. I wanted to make a tribute to the women around the world who stand on the front line of the struggle against a system built on exploitation and violence, and to connect their struggle to a proud history, the ongoing fight for liberation. From Sudan to Chile, and India to Lebanon, women have stepped up and resisted a world that demands they be passive victims, that demands that they stay in their place. But we know that a woman's place is in the struggle, that the struggle might have shifted off the streets for the time being, but it does continue, and it must. The UN policy brief on gender and COVID-19 says that in the context of the coronavirus, limited gains made in the past decades toward gender equality are at risk of being rolled back. It is a stark reminder that for us, every reform that we fight for and win can be taken away from us. In the closing paragraphs of the brief, the UN warns against choosing to simply repeat past policies and failing to use this moment to rebuild a more equal, inclusive, and resilient societies. A workers' revolution might not be quite what the UN policy wonks have in mind, but as the violence of bourgeois social relations are laid bare in society, and the essential role of labor, especially that of women, is plain for all to see, we have a responsibility to avoid the mistakes of our own movement's past and to use this movement to work towards building a struggle that draws its power from below, capable of reorganizing society to liberate all oppressed peoples. We need a movement that goes beyond reform and an understanding of society that connects the oppression of women, workers, and indigenous peoples with the power of capitalism and the state. We must join together in a shared struggle for liberation. History has shown us, as will the future, that women can and must lead us there.
This week's podcast was sound edited by Greg. The What's New was written by Chisel and read by Chisel and Bruno. Library reading is The Gendered Impact of the COVID-19 Lockdown by Holly Molly, read by Octox. We hope this podcast is useful to and fun for anarchists and the anarcho-curious. Give us feedback and constructive criticism by email at podcast@anarchistnews.org. For more information and usually some good commentary, see you at your favorite non-sectarian anarchist site with commentary, anarchistnews.org.